Welcome to Rethink, a podcast focused on the future of skilled nursing. I'm Jack Silverstein of Skilled Nursing News. I'm joined for this episode by Bob Lane, Director of Long-Term Care and Senior Living, Forvis Mazars, as we discussed changes to the facility assessment and staffing quality measures and explained how operators are connecting the dots between the two. Before we get to that conversation, I would like to highlight an upcoming event in the new year. Skilled Nursing News 2025 Clinical Executive Conference will take place on February 18th in Bonita Springs, Florida. Clinical explores trends, challenges, and opportunities facing clinical and business leaders in skilled nursing. Visit skillednursingnews.com/events to find out more. And now, my conversation with Bob Lane. Our guest today is Bob Lane, Director of Long-Term Care and Senior Living, Forvis Mazars. Bob, thank you for joining us today.
Well, it's my pleasure, Jack.
Our topic is connecting the dots, the facility assessment, the staffing quality measure, and your staffing pattern. I want to start out, though, by asking you a little bit about Forvis Mazars, in case people are not familiar with what you do. How do you explain it?
Well, Forvis Mazars is a full-service CPA and advisory firm. In addition to the healthcare space, we, of course, do work with clients in a variety of other industries. But specifically in healthcare, we work with all types of providers, hospitals, physicians' offices, community health centers, skilled nursing, and the like. And we provide both financial as well as consultative services to help our clients to improve their outcomes.
And one of the ways that you do that is through the facility assessment, correct?
Well, that is a piece of our consultative deliverables that we can perform for our clients.
Perfect. So tell us about that as it pertains to staffing, please.
Well, the facility assessment has been around as part of regulation dating back to around, I believe, 2017. First, I'd like to really comment on the status of the minimum staffing mandate, which these updated requirements for the facility assessments are part of. As your listeners likely know, Jack, the status of this mandate is kind of in flux. While two separate court cases progress, we don't know exactly what's going to occur, but changes to the requirements are certainly possible. That said, the intent of these changes to the facility assessment provisions still makes sense for providers to follow, regardless of if the other provisions are waived or eliminated. While the facility assessment, as I said, has been around since around 2017, the new regulations under the minimum staffing standards for long-term care that were published in May of this year, and then, of course, guidance is published in June, made these provisions effective 90 days from that date or effective August 8th of this year. This is the first component that is being implemented, with the other components of the staffing mandate set to occur over the next several years, presuming no changes occur in 2025. The updated requirements include how the assessment is used to inform staffing decisions, requirements for active participation by certain individuals, and use of an acuity-based process for staffing. This updated policy also does stipulate that facilities must use evidence-based methods when planning care for their residents, including consideration for those residents with behavioral health needs, and linking all that data to staffing.
What kind of changes are you anticipating in 2025? Like, can we see into your crystal ball?
Well, the staffing mandate incorporates both changes in wording and some additional new requirements. We've got to include the evaluation of the resident population and its needs, which that piece really isn't anything new. But these new provisions for the assessment does require providers now to also reflect their present population, which means if you happen to admit somebody with a new need, this could prompt an adjustment of your facility assessment. The minimum requirement, of course, is that the facility assessments must be reviewed and updated on an annual basis. And some facilities out there, you know, pretty much care for the same types of residents, so that may be sufficient for them. However, many other providers do have referrals from hospitals that may have some different care needs, such as ventilators, dialysis, among others. This would certainly trigger the need to update your assessment, and of course, a review of your staffing, what resources may be needed, supplies, et cetera, all that that stems from this different type of resident. Does this, you know, this new resident's care needs require substantial modifications to staff to meet those needs? What about changes possibly to contracts with vendors that could impact your ability to meet that new resident's needs? Same for equipment and the like. All of these must be considered as part of that assessment. Other changes include active involvement of a prescribed list of individuals to be involved in the process, including nursing home leadership and management, which includes but is not limited to a member of the governing body. Also the medical director, of course, the administrator, director of nursing, and direct care staff, which of course includes RNs, LPNs, CNAs. And a unique piece of language here, representatives of the direct care staff, if applicable.
What does that mean?
Yeah, we're reading that to essentially be associated with if a facility does have a organized labor bargaining unit as part of the organization, those representatives of the direct care staff, that would be the union, basically, I believe.
Okay. So you've touched on some of these, but I want to ask it directly. What are the updated requirements for the facility assessment pertaining to staffing?
Well, the updated requirements for staffing as far as within the facility assessment, the staffing mandate, of course, also requires that they consider input from residents, their representatives or family members. And of course, while those requirements prescribe who and what must be done, the how, of course, is left up to the provider in terms of what that looks like. Maybe they're soliciting input through surveys, maybe online, suggestion box, and the like. Some other changes include using the facility assessment to inform staffing decisions. This includes, of course, competencies and skill sets that may be required. So, you know, similarly to performing performance assessments of our staff and determining what their training needs might be over the course of the coming year based on their performance, this also now needs to be directly correlated to population needs. So, you know, if you've got someone maybe with various cultural and ethnic considerations, what kind of additional training may need to be done to inform your staff what that then means for how they provide day-to-day interaction and care? If there's a gap, then of course that would be where you would need to provide some additional time and effort around competency and skill sets.
Are those considerations that operators should have in their recruitment and retention plan going into 2025?
Well, that's definitely part of the facility assessment as a whole, Jack, but the recruitment and retention plan is an entirely new element as part of this facility assessment as well.
Perfect. So why don't you tell me about that? What must be included in the recruitment and retention plan?
Well, as I said, it's brand new. Basically, while we're not exactly sure what they're going to be looking for specifically, but we know that the guidance does require a plan for the recruitment and retention of direct care staff to maximize, the retention and their ability to fill open positions. That's got to be included in the facility assessment. What's that look like? It might be everything from such as how many dollars are you spending on advertising? Do I do an onboarding program? You know, maybe it's yes on both of those fronts. And as far as I can understand the language they've included in the guidance, They really just want to see that you're putting your best foot forward. You've got some sort of intentional effort behind your recruitment and retention plan. Be able to tie your actions to some specific data that drives them will be the key, I think.
Perfect. Let's shift gears, but on a related note, the staffing quality measures, what makes that up?
Well, there's, of course, a total of 6 staffing quality measures that are calculated and reported in CMS's Care Compare website. 3 of these have been around for a little while, pertaining to overall direct care staffing, as well as RN staffing, and then direct care staffing specifically on weekends. There are 3 other staff turnover measures covering percentage of nursing staff that left over the last 12 months, percentage of registered nurses that left, and the number of administrators that left. The staffing domain measures are of course calculated separately based on the data submitted through the provider's payroll-based journal reports, and then of course reported quarterly. Those are given points for each measure, and then those points are then summed to provide a total staffing score. So the key here I want to emphasize is it's important to assure accuracy with your payroll-based journal submissions, because erroneous hours are going to impact your number of points. Originally, there wasn't, of course, an impact to your score if no data was submitted on PBJ. However, now CMS has indicated that failure to submit data or submitting erroneous data through PBJ will result in receiving the lowest score for the turnover measures.
Wonderful. What updates then have been made to these quality measures?
Well, first of all, the staffing domain measures were frozen in April of this year, and then on July 31st, these quality measures were unfrozen and then began being reported again on Care Compare. Part of these updates, CMS changed the gap period during which no work hours are reported for defining nurse staffing turnover from 60 days to 90 days, specifically for the 3 staff turnover measures. This includes individuals who no longer work at the nursing home, and they are defined as eligible individuals who have a period of at least 90 consecutive days in which they don't work at all. Previously, that was for individuals who were on leave for 60 days or more were counted as turnover. This change was, of course, made to better reflect and accommodate necessary maternity and paternity leave and be a little more consistent with FMLA. Another change had to do with the case mix adjustment methodology that they use. That and providers may have seen slight changes in their star rating on Care Compare because of this adjustment. The reason that they had frozen these measures from April to July was to transition the methodology from what they had been using with the old RUGS 4 payment system to, of course, the patient-driven payment model, which is now being used.
Perfect. So let's connect these dots then, because we've been talking about the facility assessment, we've been talking about the quality measures. How do these 2 components relate to each other?
Well, they correlate with each other in a couple of 2 or 3 different ways. One is, of course, is the data-driven approach. Both of these, of course, use data to come up with the particular metric that we're looking at. There's transparency and accountability, and of course, the quality of care.
And how do these programs intend to improve quality of care?
Well, of course, the updated facility assessment and the Care Compare staffing measures, using those data-driven methods to determine staffing, as well as the transparency and accountability by inclusion of staff turnover and weekend staffing measures, that aligns with the updated facility assessment's focus on comprehensive and transparent staffing evaluations. As far as quality of care, both sets of these updates aim to improve the quality of care in nursing facilities by assuring adequate staffing levels. The minimum staffing standards in the facility assessment are reflected in the detailed staffing measures that are reported on Care Compare. one informs the other.
And where does Forvis fit in to this for operators?
Forvis can do a number of different things for our clients. First of all, is we do have the we have a nice practice that involves assisting clients with the payroll-based journal submission system in terms of reviewing their entries of hours and classification in terms of where those hours are classified at, as well as being able to assist with the review of the facility assessment to make sure that those assessments do include all of the necessary components in the guidance, and to provide some experiential guidance in terms of how best to address some of these particular requirements.
Perfect. All right, so let's put it all together. Let's look big picture. What are your top tier pieces of advice for how operators need to prepare in 2025 to have success with everything that we've just been talking about? And if that's three pieces of advice or four pieces or five pieces, whatever it is, the top tier, the must have, you gotta do it, make it happen, pieces of advice for operators.
Sure. Well, I mean, first of all is, you know, accuracy of data. I think that applies on both sides, making sure that more than one set of eyes is taking a look at this information. It's not that unlike the what we call the triple check process with Medicare assessments. This is data that is publicly reported and is available. You know, first of all, the facility assessment should be, you know, informing all of your care delivery decisions. And having a in lieu of perhaps a strategic plan or as a supplement to it, the facility assessment, even if that, you know, the rest of the staffing mandate goes away, this is an excellent exercise in identifying what gaps may exist in your current, you know, systems so that you can fill those to give better care.
Perfect. Any other tips that go along with that?
Other than just, you know, again, please take this seriously. This is not just, you know, checking the boxes. CMS is very intent on both of these particular programs to, you know, when they're in looking at regulatory compliance, they're going to be coming back to that facility assessment. The care compare data should be jiving up with what you're reflecting in your facility assessment. All of this could determine whether you end up with deficiency citations on your survey.
Fabulous. Well, Bob, we really appreciate your time today. We appreciate everything Forvis is doing. And I know that operators have really learned a lot here. You know, the complexities of the facility assessment and the CMS staff turnover measures, they can be challenging. And we know that operators will learn to connect the dots between the two and turn to Forvis when they do so. So thank you very much for your time and happy holidays.
Thanks, Jack. Same to you.
That does it for this episode of Rethink. I would like to remind listeners about our 2025 Clinical Executive Conference on February 18th in Bonita Springs, Florida. Visit skillednursingnews.com/events to learn more and get tickets. Until next time, I'm Jack Silverstein for Skilled Nursing News. Thank you for listening.